Right. What a morning it's been so far. Is this a good morning or what? This is only my third week here. As I've joked to some of you, we've accomplished, Shannon and I, we've packed about like 3 months worth of work in the last like 2 or 3 weeks. So many things are happening, but I appreciate your patience because I would love to get to know and sit down with each and every one of you, and I just don't have the time to do that one-on-one yet. I'm working my way through. But as we're doing all these things, and we're also experimenting, trying different things. Last week, I'm more of a visual talker. So last week, I was trying some of the stuff here with the screen. And we're working on some new ideas. We're trying out some different things, including we worked with Char in the group here to try to do some new layouts in the lobby there. We're trying to make it so that the space coming in and out feels intentional. Lots of neat things are happening, and we appreciate your patience as we figure it out, because most things are going to just be trial and error, and figuring out what works for our community and what works best for us, so that however long we're here, whether it's the full 2 years, 18 months, or less, that it's the best fit for us, for our community, and that it's a welcoming space for everybody coming in. This is Pride Month, and I have a particular sense of excitement, because this is a talk. I struggled over the title of this talk because this is a talk that I really wanted to be able to give so many years ago. My feelings and my thoughts around these subjects have shifted, and I want to give you my perspective on where I've come. I want to be the first to acknowledge that having a straight, white, cisgendered male kicking off Pride Month is probably not the best idea if you want a perspective that is befitting of the month. However, I did do my best to get in the mood. So I have these lovely painted nails right here. Now, they look great from out there. That's about as close as you should see them. The way this happened is this. My daughter, Emily, is really big into painting nails. And I have, as a dad of two daughters, I've painted dozens of nails. And I consider myself quite good. But painting your own nails is very different. And the plan was she was supposed to do it for me. She's got the lights and the thing and all the other stuff. She was going to do it for me. And she ended up leaving, going out of town, so my nail polish came in, and I'm stuck doing it last night, and I'm painting it, and I thought I was like, okay, good, it should dry, and Lisa's like, you know, that takes like forever to dry, why'd you do that before you go to bed? And I said, well, Emily, like when she does it, it's like dry in 15 minutes. She said, that's gel, this is just like cheap nail polish. So I'm like in the bathroom at 11:30 at night with my blow dryer going like this, and then... And I get into bed, and I kind of pull the covers up because I wasn't sure if it was still wet yet. And I kind of pull it up and did this and lay my hands over like this. And Lisa looks over, and she's like, are you going to sleep like that? And I'm like, I'm going to fall asleep like that. And she says, it's going to wake up and be smudge. And they're not. They held on. So between that and my socks and these lovely C3 shirts, do we see the new shirts that came in there? Very cool. What I want to say is this. We get the opportunity during this month to be allies and advocate for those whose voices oftentimes don't get heard. We get to center voices that are important. And my goal is to center the voices of people who matter in this conversation. But the perspective that I want to bring this morning is one of how I came from being raised within the most anti of gay households to come to where I am now, where I'm painting my nails and speaking in front of you on a Pride Sunday here in a community. I came of age during the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. I remember the conversations about Magic Johnson and how that was just simply the judgment of God on those whose lifestyles didn't conform to what we read about in the scriptures. We grew up in a homeschool Christian bubble with good old Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family. Does anybody know or recognize that name? If you do, I'm so sorry. I really work on goodwill towards all of humanity, and when I do those kind of meditations, my meta-meditations, it's especially hard to wish goodwill towards people like James Dobson. because of all the damage that has been done. But that's how I grew up, and I was steeped in all of this. I had family members who were gay and would have ceremonies or have events, and our family would not participate. We would not go to weddings. We would not support that lifestyle. It was confusing for me as I was growing up to think that I had cousins that were going to hell, and we would go to these family get-togethers, and as a developing kid, to try to wrestle with this idea of this cousin who seems fun and fine, but is living a lifestyle that I was told was contrary to everything that we believed in. Fast forward through the years, I began deconstructing, and somebody asked for a little bit of clarification on that word there. When I use that word deconstructing, it's taking these systems that used to work for you, things that you used to orient your world around, and to begin to systematically deconstruct or break them down, and then to then figure out what do I now believe. I've gone through deconstruction in my faith journey, my spirituality. But on this subject, this was probably one of the earlier ones for me that I began to feel some rumblings, because it doesn't take much to look out in the world and to see how people within the LGBTQ community have had to exist growing up in this culture. And we talked about in pre-talk, there's all kinds of conversations we can have, hypothetically speaking, about how we would respond to this person or this situation, or what if a transgender person uses the same bathroom that we're in. And we have all these hypothetical ideas, but there's something different about when it comes down to relationship. And I'm far more interested in having conversations about how I treat the people that I know that are in my life, because relationships matter, and people matter. One of the values that drew me to C3 is the value of open inquiry. I'm going to read that here. It says that we pursue the free exchange of ideas, exploring the lessons of science, philosophy, and the creative arts, and undertake independent spiritual journeys. I love the wording that was chosen for that, because we are all on these independent paths. But this idea of open inquiry is one that I've held as a value for quite some time. And science has always been the cornerstone for how I approach decisions. And so when I've come up against difficult conversations, science has felt like a safer place to me, especially given the fact that I grew up where the Bible was the single and sole source for all decisions. So once I deconstructed the ability of having to filter all my ideas through this book, then I started to say, well, what do I believe about these subjects? And one of the first places that we'll start is in the idea of science. For me, in about 2015, there was a podcast that was out called The Liturgist. Anybody who's done any work in the deconstructive movement may be familiar with that. Michael Gunger and Mike McCarg and a handful of others that were part of that. It was a really big podcast for those who were in the know. And for me, because my radars were up and I was searching so desperately as I was deconstructing, I think this was episode 20, so this would have been within the very first season in August of 2015. They did an episode simply called LGBTQ. And it was a 2.5-hour episode. And that was a watershed moment for me, because I'd read some books, I'd had some conversations, but what I remember, and I went back and I re-listened to that podcast now, and it's interesting listening to it with my ears now, but I remember the time, the thing that really impacted me were not a bunch of facts, although there were some in there, but the stories, because the stories are what matter. You can be knowledgeable about all the different pronoun usage and all the different gender expressions, but when it comes down to it, how welcoming are you to people who are not like you? And how open are you towards changing the way that you connect with them so that both they feel heard and seen, and you can engage in genuine, meaningful relationship. If, for example, I happen to tell you that I've been falsifying my name and all of my records, and my name is not actually Brad, it's John, that would be strange, first of all. But if I did do that, and you struggle with the fact that, yeah, but I knew you as Brad, and now you're as John, like, there's some conversations that need to be had around that. And it's these conversations that we want to dive into, and I want to walk through the things that helped me on my journey as I was beginning to go through this. So, as I said, I started first with the idea of the sciences. Mike McCarg had a section in that podcast. I want to just sort of read what he said because this was helpful for me. We're going to start first at the higher level of sexuality or biology. Then we're going to get a little bit more into our sexuality, and then we're going to talk about gender identity and gender expression. So we're going to cover a lot of ground. This is not meant to be overwhelming. This is kind of an overview, and this is my journey that I've been on, and it's not going to look like yours. I would strongly encourage everything that I say for you to check your own facts, for you to do your own reading and watch your own stories, and to, more importantly, engage in conversations with the people that you want to be better at connecting with. Mike McCarg said, our bodies respond much like any other animals in the animal kingdom to visual or any other forms of sexual stimulus. But the cognition in humans regarding gender and orientation is remarkably complex and poorly understood. The fact is, biologically speaking, these clear categories of male and female or straight and gay, they simply don't exist. They are human constructs projected onto the science. I'm not saying that most of us don't feel that we easily fit into a binary of male or female, but the fact is, the scientific picture backs up the fact that the ones that we marginalize the most, the people who don't fit in the majority position, biology, neuroscience, and even DNA reinforces the idea that our popular conceptions of gender and orientation are simplistic at best and outright harmful to some people at worst. What I began to realize early on is that Christianity, Western religion, has the tendency to take overly simple things, like a commandment to love your neighbor, and make it so complicated, and to take something so incredibly complex and nuanced, like sexuality, gender expression, and to reduce it down to simple black and white pat answers. And I struggled with that early on because I looked, and as I began to think about where I saw expressions of sexuality and gender in nature, that it was incredibly diverse, existed on a spectrum, and looked nothing like how we as Homo sapiens treated sexuality and gender. So let's talk first for just a second. Let's get sciencey and put our science hats on for a minute. Talk about biology. Let's talk about our chromosomes and our hormones and our gonads and our genitals. These biological features that we have don't always agree with one another. This is the first thing to recognize as we are becoming more open in our inquiry, to recognize that when we look out across the room, we see what we think of as male faces or female faces. We look at a person's body type, and we think that because of certain body elements that they either classify themselves as male or female. But right out of the gate, things like our chromosomes and our hormones and our genitals don't always agree on what our gender is. It is estimated that 2% of live births are born with congenital conditions of atypical sex development. It basically means that something in their chromosomes, their hormones, their gonads, or their genitals is different from what people would say identifies as either boy or girl. It used to be known as intersex, but these days it's more commonly described as differences of sexual development, or DSD. 2% may not sound like a lot, but there could be as many as 130 million people or more with DSDs. again, don't take my word for it. Look this up for yourself and talk to those within our community who have experience in the medical fields that can talk about this. I remember the first time as a kid growing up, I had to have been 9 or 10 and being in a bathroom at church, in the church basement, and there was another boy at another urinal, and I remembered noticing something that didn't look like mine. And I called it out to him. I mentioned it to him, and he got upset. We got into a fight in the bathroom, and we had to have a conversation at home about that. But me as a kid, not knowing or having any understanding that not everybody is born with the same anatomy, and that from the very beginning, right out of the gate, that what we think of that fits into this easy binary doesn't always fit. You've all know Harari, who I love as an author. He wrote the book Sapiens, and that book had some other pieces that helped fall into place for me as I was beginning to rethink something. He said this, and this quote, this section is in your bulletin, said, "How can we distinguish what is biologically determined from what people merely try to justify through biological myths?" And he says this is the money conversation, the money quote right here. "The good rule of thumb is biology enables, culture forbids." Biology enables, it is culture that forbids. And usually when culture forbids, it should be forbidden out of safety or a desire for keeping the community safe. There are times when biology would enable something, such as the ability to flush your waste out into the streets, like what was happening in Europe before the plague started coming, and they realized that biology enabled humans to exist in a certain way, but culture then learned and forbade certain practices for the safety of the whole. If you're doing it from a place of safety, that's one thing, but this is where the conversation gets tricky. Biology is willing to tolerate a very wide spectrum of possibilities. It is culture that obligates people to realize some possibilities while forbidding others. Biology enables women to have children, for example. Some cultures oblige women to realize that possibility. Biology enables men to enjoy sex with one another. Some cultures forbid them to realize that possibility. Biology enables, culture forbids. So then I started to think, the culture that I grew up in had very clearly defined roles for what a man should be, for what a woman should be, for how a man should dress, for how a woman should dress. Men don't wear nail polish. They don't have long hair. Girls don't cut their hair short. They don't play those sports. We've grown up, and some of you, even before me, have more extreme examples of those kind of illustrations. We've been on the playgrounds and in the schools where issues of gender and how we fit in are being discussed by kids who are trying to find their way in the world. Let's get a little bit deeper. Let's talk about our sexuality. So we're going beyond the biology of this binary, and we recognize that the biology clearly exists on this spectrum. There's not a black and white, even though it feels like there's a binary of male and female. There's a lot of gray. There's a huge spectrum there. But as we get into sexuality, it's even more complex. Sexuality refers to who you are attracted to. This can be equally complicated, and this can also exist on a spectrum. Where you are on this spectrum isn't necessarily fixed. For example, some of you may have heard, has anyone heard the expression, a LUG, L-U-G? A LUG stands for lesbian until graduation. So there's college experimentation. Like, I've done that, I've tried it, but that doesn't feel like a fit for me. So your attraction may change. It may change throughout your lifetime. It may not change at all. You may be born into the body that identifies as the gender that you were assigned at birth. And you may be attracted to the opposite sex and feel like you can't identify with how that would work. And that is the fact, isn't it? That we don't take enough time to stop to walk in somebody else's shoes and to experience what it is like to be them. I don't have experience, lived experience, of what it is like to be attracted to someone of the same gender, nor to have to hide aspects of my relationship because I was afraid of rebuttal or reprisal from friends or family. I've never had aspects of my life that were so reprehensible that I've had family members cut off relationship. But that's happened, and it happens a lot. Strict sexual preference and orientation is actually somewhat unique in terms of the human phenomenon. In the animal kingdom, most animals exhibit same-sex sexual interaction. Anybody who has ever gone to the zoo and seen the orangutans and the monkeys and stuff will know that they are not too picky about their sexual proclivities. They will happily engage with someone of the same sex as well as the opposite sex. Most animals, the vast majority of animals, including primates, including mammals, including dolphins and elephants and other large brain, complex mammals, exhibit these behaviors. These are not abnormalities as we have been taught to think. These are natural things. And this is the part that took a while for me to change my thinking on, because one of the ways that we were brought up was that this was abhorrent or unnatural behavior. Within the scriptures, unfortunately, I still remember these scriptures, but there are scriptures that talk about how it is abhorrent for a man to lay with a man as to a woman. He shall be cursed before God. I've read Matthew Vines, and I happen to actually believe that if Paul were alive today and if he were to be questioned on his views of homosexuality, I actually happen to think that he probably would have been against it, and I just happen to think he would have been wrong. The same way that he was wrong on the role of women in the church and submissiveness and other things like that. But this was the foundation of what I was taught. So I was told this is unnatural, abhorrent behavior. But as I'm learning myself and deconstructing, I'm looking at the animal kingdom, looking at science, I'm looking at nature, I'm realizing, well, no, this is a uniquely human thing that we are so hung up on who a person decides to be attracted to. We've made a way bigger issue out of it than we needed to. But we're only just talking now about biology and sexuality. Where it gets really tricky, and this is where the conversation has caught up to where we're at in our culture today, and this is around the conversation about gender and gender expression. So gender is an interesting concept, but it's also uniquely human, so it's important to put that out there as a caveat. Gender expression and identity is a uniquely human thing, and in fact, in evolution, asexual reproduction actually far predates sexual reproduction. Clownfish, for example, which are vertebrates and complex animals, are all born female, and then the most assertive, dominant male turns into a female for breeding. Man, you can have a lot. There's so many things you could take out of that conversation, right? Man, think about how different our world would be if that were the case. But that's just one species out of the thousands of species. The fact is that sexual reproduction on our planet is incredibly complex, incredibly diverse, and exists on a spectrum. Gender refers to the social and cultural attributes and understanding of men and women and their roles. So we start first with the biology of how we're born. Complicated. We think that it fits into this either or, but there's a lot of a spectrum in the middle where there's some gray. And then you go from your biology to your sexuality, who you're attracted to. Again, a lot of complex interactions can change over time, and it's not on a fixed point. It can exist on a spectrum. But then gender identity and gender expression are even more complex and a more recent part of this conversation, and probably the area where a lot of us have in the past struggled the most, because these are where we get the conversations around issues like pronouns, which we're going to talk about in a second. But the gender that you identify with may or may not be the gender that you were born into, which is why some people have chosen to undertake surgeries or hormones to have the outside of them present in the gender that feels the most authentic for them. This is where the conversations start getting messy. Well, am I a frog then? Can I just simply say I'm a frog? Well, it's a lot more complicated than that, as somebody mentioned in pre-talk. More often than not, and I would say this first and foremost, if before you do any type of conversation, anything about this, read the books, but then start by engaging in relationship with people who this is their life and their world, because the only true perspective you're going to get is not by me, some white cisgendered guy up on stage telling you about it. But I can tell you that me as a white cisgendered male have friends and family who are all across the spectrum. I have people who present and want to be known as they, them, who are non-binary. I've struggled with the language. I've tried to engage in the conversations. I've messed up more than I've gotten it right, but I'm leaning into the conversation because this is the conversation that needs to be had now. I have been listening to, it kind of in preparation for Pride Month, I've been expanding my book reading. I got a set of collected essays by Audre Lorde. Some of you nod. How many have read or know of Audre Lorde? Hands up. Look at that. This is why I love C3 so much. You guys are amazing. I quote somebody like that. Instead of blank faces, I get nodding heads. I love that. Audre Lorde called herself a black feminist author. And she was an activist and a black lesbian feminist. I'm sorry. She was a black lesbian feminist author, speaker. And she had so many wonderful things to add to the conversation. But I realized as she wove together from her writings, many of them in the early 90s, how parallel the tracks were between the conversations around sexuality and the conversations that were being had at the time around racism. And the solutions are exactly the same. I went through this same process of learning all the different areas where I thought I didn't see color and how that privilege clouded everything that I did. And so then I began to open up my eyes and educate myself and realize it was my job to educate myself about the areas where racism affected my life. It was my job. I didn't have to put that responsibility on someone in that community to teach me or to correct me. I had to learn. This conversation now, it behooves us to have these tough talks and to do the reading and to engage in these conversations, because this is how change happens. Not by some hypothetical situation of somebody in some bathroom somewhere that we've never met or don't know about, or some inflammatory news article, but your cousin, your nephew. These people that are coming up in an age where they're desperately trying to carve out a piece of their identity in a world that feels like everything's out of control. So let's talk about pronouns, because we just passed a policy, there we go. A policy on pronoun usage for C3, which I love, because this is a relevant part of the conversation, and also probably one of the ones where there's the most discomfort, right? What does this look like for me? So gender expression, if gender expression is a universe, then when someone identifies with a pronoun, they are essentially taking their little piece in that broad universe and identifying with that. They're saying that out of this wide world of ways that they could be known and present to the world, that this is the way that feels most authentic and most true for them. And when we use their chosen pronouns, we are respecting their identity. We're validating their existence. The part that I struggled with growing up was, as a family, like if you went to a gay wedding, you know, are we affirming? Are we placing our approval on? These were the conversations that I had, or that our family had as a kid. Same conversations are being had now around the pronouns, and it's the same thing. It doesn't matter what the pronoun is. What we are about here at C3, and the two pieces of the values have already been read this morning, but I think are worth bearing on this conversation. The values of diversity and common humanity should drive how we engage in the world. Let me read first the diversity one. Diversity says that we affirm all people and embrace all genders, all sexual orientations, and all ethnicities. We don't have to explain it. We don't have to understand it. We may not get it right all the time, but we are doing our very best to change when we can. One of my yoga instructors uses this refrain a lot that has become a refrain for me. I do my best until I know better, and when I know better, I do my best. And that's all that we can do in this conversation. This is an evolving, nuanced, messy, complicated topic. It's definitely not something that we're going to figure out in one talk on a Sunday gathering here in Grand Haven. But it's something that we should be leaning into. And when we come into a month like Pride Month, and I think about the things that I wish I could have said, how I could go back and what I wish I could have done. And then I remember that to go back and to think about our past with any form of regret is futile. We were the people we were. We came from where we came from, and we knew only what we knew. I can't change the things that I said that I regret. I can't change the beliefs that I held that are now repugnant to me. But I'm responsible for who I am and the open-minded inquiry that I engage in now, moving forward. Common humanity. Common humanity says that we respect the dignity and the worth of every individual, whether they're gay, straight, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, whether we understand the pronouns that they are using or not, whether we can relate to aspects of their story or not, we respect their ability to exist as human beings. Those who are going to be at the Pride Festival, or anybody who's ever walked in a Pride Festival. I can't help but walking in those and looking in the eyes of the people that are there and recognizing that there are so many stories, so many tears, so many heartbreaks that I don't know about because I didn't get to live them. And my privilege shielded me from the pain, the difficulty of their experience in this world. So what's the best thing that I can do? The best thing that I can do is to relate to them by listening. This last quote, which is in your bulletin, is from James Baldwin's book, Giovanni's Room. James Baldwin, of course, being an excellent black gay author, he said this in that book: there's so many ways of being despicable that it makes one's head spin, but the way to be really despicable is to be contemptuous of other people's pain. In a conversation earlier this week, Shannon and I were kind of just doing some big picture thinking, and he casually said something that I pulled out my phone and wrote down real quick because it just really rang true. We were talking about all the different people that come to C3 and call it their home, and all the different backgrounds. And I've started meeting with some of you, and like, there are so many different things from different backgrounds that I don't relate to. I grew up like evangelical cult, like weird over here. Some of you grew up like in mainline denominations. Some of you grew up Catholic or not at all. Like, we have all these different backgrounds, this beautiful tapestry of people coming together. But Shannon said that everybody in their past has some form of discomfort or thing that didn't feel right for them, whether it was a church experience or some way that they were treated. And there's that discomfort that they carry. And he said that there's a place at C3 beyond your discomfort where you can be comfortable again. And I wrote that down. There's a space beyond your discomfort where you can be comfortable again. That may not be for you, but that may be for the people who are not sitting in these seats, or maybe for the people who are not ever going to walk into these seats because it's too triggering for them. But what we can do is we can connect with them and see them as fellow human beings, part of this whole, and to recognize that they matter, their story matters. And because they matter and because we respect their common humanity, I will do everything in my power to try to change the way I communicate if it makes you feel more seen, more heard, more validated. Pronouns.org is a great website to start if you want to do some reading and watching and some videos. And yeah, it does feel strange because we're going through these cultural shifts, but Leslie mentioned this morning her perspective on when Miss, M-I-S-S, wasn't a part of the global word usage, the colloquialism. It was Mr. or Mrs. There was a time that, it's strange for me to think about that, there was a time where that in-between option wasn't even available. And we've adapted to that, but it's far more complicated than that right now, right? So we can do this. We can learn, we can change, we can grow, we can mess up by respecting the common humanity of those that are here with us. As Grace comes back up and is going to wrap us up with a couple more songs, I just want to say, while I'm thinking about what this looks like for me, and please hear me when I say it's strange because I don't want to center myself on this conversation. This is not a conversation that should revolve around me because my contribution to it is only that of an ally. But my story matters because there are so many people like me who have been on this journey or are somewhere along the way, and I get it, I relate to that. And if I could say anything, what I wish I could have said is just simply to see past someone, not for their gender, their identity, how they present, but to respect their common humanity. And if I can see them as a fellow human being worthy of love and respect, then I'd be foolish, like James Baldwin said, if I contemptuously took their lived experience and trampled it underfoot as something not worthy of engaging with. I think we all have the opportunities this month, but then in our day-to-day lives, to make this a part of our focus, to lean into these tough conversations, to educate ourselves, and to be the versions of ourselves in this world that gives that safe place for those who feel uncomfortable, those who are marginalized. Thank you. Namaste.